Representing the West, Eric Dehatchek from the Globe and Mail, globesports.com, and of course our good friend Al Morganti from Comcast Sportsnet, lead hockey writer in Philadelphia, joining us this afternoon. Gentlemen, in the near future, is it possible that we might see an afternoon Thanksgiving game involving a team in Seattle? And Al, I'll come around to you. Story out of the Seattle Times yesterday is the speculation maybe the NHL's dragging its feet on expansion to Vegas and Quebec City because they're waiting on Seattle. Is this possible? Should they wait?
I don't know that they're – I don't know how much stock to put in it. I was surprised that it – you know, everybody thought this was going to happen really quickly. My suspicion is nothing can get done quickly with the amount of money you're talking about. I mean, I can see a point there where they're saying, all right, if we get the rights for this arena that we're trying to get, and we get the shovels in the ground and get things going and all the approvals, we certainly will be a viable candidate with all the money that's up there. And it's somewhere the NHL would certainly like to go, whether or not it's coupled with a basketball or not. But I still think that their two main targets are already identified in Vegas and Quebec. Now, the Canadian dollar throws an interesting wrench into this. I mean, I don't know, and I see the worth of the teams down with Toronto. I'm wondering how much that actually would play into it. But I got to think that they have their sights set, and if anything happens afterwards, Seattle is a secondary thing. But I think this is mostly wishful thinking out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head. First of all, you know, the NHL is going slow, on expansion, but it has nothing to do with waiting for Seattle. It is just the fact that they have to still make the decision about whether they want to expand. And so, for example, you know, when they originally vetted these applications, I think the belief was that the executive committee would meet sometime in the fall and then issue a report to the Board of Governors in December, and at that point, an expansion vote would take place. Well, now the executive committee isn't even the meeting to talk about expansion until the day before that meeting in December. So the earliest possible vote would be in Nashville at the All-Star game, and even that is a long shot right now. They just want to make sure that they're doing the right thing. Of the two applications that they've got, the favorite one is obviously Las Vegas. It's a market that they really want to get into. Never lose sight of the fact that the NHL ideally wants 16 teams in the West and 16 teams in the East. They have never lost sight of the fact that if Seattle had a building in place and a well-moneyed ownership group that was willing to pay the freight, that's a preferred destination. They want Seattle, but Seattle has not been ready, and they are not prepared to put off a decision if they want to go into Quebec just to make sure, in case somebody comes up with the money and they put shovels in the ground. So that's really what it is. They want it, and I think that it doesn't necessarily even have to be through expansion. I mean, let's face it, there's all kinds of teams right now that are still bleeding red ink, that are not real strong franchises. You know, the Arizona Coyotes, they're going to be a maximum of two more years in Glendale. They're hoping to go in a new building. They're exploring all kinds of options. They would be a relocation candidate to Seattle if the NHL did award expansion teams together. So I wouldn't rule Seattle out. You know, within the next 10 years, I would be surprised if Seattle wasn't in the National Hockey League. But to say that the NHL is waiting for Seattle, that's just false.
Is there any difference, guys, in terms of a relocation destination and a expansion destination? Darren Dreger reported last week that there might be some thought out there that maybe leave Quebec City as a relocation destination. Al, is there a difference between, for you, a relocation and an expansion destination?
Well, $500 million.
Yeah.
That's why I just brought up that, like, that's way over my head, what's going on with the Canadian dollar, American dollar, what that will mean in terms of, I assume everything is done in American dollars. So I don't know how much that would matter. But no, you'd rather, if you're an owner, you want to get that fee right up front. I mean, I don't know what they could set any standard they want for relocating. I mean, I guess you could make a rules on the fly as you go for relocation. But it's not as cut and dried as you would when you just put a new team in.
The difference between relocation and expansion is that a relocation scenario involves two bodies. You know, if we're using Arizona as an example, the Arizona ownership group is trying to sell the team. Whoever has the money in Seattle is trying to buy it. They can negotiate whatever price they like. When Winnipeg bought the Atlanta Thrashers, the price was $170 million. The Canadian dollar was at par. As Al points out, with the way the Canadian dollar has dropped, if Quebec were awarded an expansion franchise, it would cost the people that are buying a Quebecor four times what the Winnipeg group paid. And that is, I think that's too much. I think Winnipeg is just barely making it right now. They're a real solid franchise in a small building, in a small community that is extremely well run, and they are not drawing on NHL revenue sharing. If you invested four times that in a city that's very comparable and has the same challenges that Winnipeg does, I don't see how you make money. I think what you do is you guarantee another organization that is going to bleed red ink. So that's why it would make more sense to me for Quebec to be a relocated franchise, because if they bought Florida or if they bought Carolina, you know, you could negotiate a smaller amount of the purchase price would just be lower. And if you could negotiate a lower purchase price, you would just have a better chance of operating as a sound business than if you throw $700 million Canadian into it right off the bat. That's a lot of money to invest in a franchise, and how you get a rate of return on that investment is beyond me. I don't think you can.
East West Hot Stove, Eric DeHatchuk, Al Morganti. Now, guys, every year on programs very similar to this, we debate the merits of fighting. That's just what we do. That's a tradition in hockey. But statistics bear out at least this conversation. Through the first quarter of the NHL season, there is 0.26 fights per game in the NHL. That is an NHL low, or historically an NHL low. Al, is it just evaporating? Is it a trend? I mean, is it on its way out just organically?
Yes, it is. That's the way it's going to happen. I mean, I know you've got four or five teams where everybody wears a shield now. It doesn't make any sense. And usually, I mean, fighting's, I would think, up earlier in a year anyway, and these numbers are so low.
Yeah.
When you're paying a coach like Babcock so much money, and you look at historically where his teams are in the fighting scale, I don't even know they're one of the zeros this year. I think Tampa and Toronto have zero. It just doesn't make any sense. It's to the point where you don't even think it's serious anymore. Like kids that are just watching the game, it's so uncommon to see it, like more than one fight in a game. I think divisionally out there in the West, maybe there's been some in the Pacific more than here.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I mean, I rarely see a game where it's in any way a factor. It kind of looks silly, and that eventually will be really what kills it, because instead of tough, it will look silly. Nobody wants to look silly, and that's where it's come to. I mean, there are still moments where it matters. If somebody gets hit, somebody gets a bad check, and there'll always be that. It will always happen that way. You're never going to take out that just pure emotion. But the stage things, it's going to become laughable, and that'll be why it'll be non-existent anymore, save the emotional overload that you're going to have anyway, no matter what rules you make.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that you can absolutely say is the staged fight is dead, and it has a lot to do with the fact that the fighters who were on roster simply to fight, they can't play anymore. You know, the game is so fast. The shifts are so short. The teams have to use everybody on the bench. There's been a move towards having specialists on the fourth line that can score goals in shootouts, that can be effective 3-on-3, that can help you on the power play. So, you know, we just don't have in the National Hockey League in this day and age players who are on the roster anymore just to fight. And that's a big change even from 5 years ago. And that's the reason that fighting is going away.
Al, I got to pick your brain, though. You know, Broad Street. How does that go over in Philadelphia? Do you hear about it in your programming?
Yeah. It's just funny. We just had Ty Domi on the air for an hour this past week. And, you know, the line is lit up for him. He was telling the story when he went in the box and fought the fan in Philadelphia. And everybody loved it. But and it's quieted down a little. But still, when this team goes bad, and I assume the same is true in Boston, it'll be like, well, we just got to go run somebody over. But we watched it. It didn't work. Their fans are finally getting it through their heads. I mean, you can pry off the top of Ronaldo's head all you want and try to pour some common sense into it. It's not going to work. And you can see that guy just becomes less and less effective. Even in Philadelphia, they were tired of that act. It just didn't work. So if Philadelphia is near the end, they're still getting up for the fight. You know, there's a fight, everybody gets on their feet or whatever. But it's the hockey fans so much smarter now, and they're so much more excited over a player like Gostisbehere than anybody they can throw hands.
Al, Eric, I'm going to come back and start this last question for you. Today, the Montreal Canadiens extended their general manager, Marc Bergevin, which, you know, by all accounts, he's done a great job. But it's the term. It's 6 years. In this day and age, does the term jump out at you? I mean, to make that commitment? Or is that maybe a smart move on Montreal's part?
Well, if the term was for a coach, it would surprise me, because I do think that no matter how good a coach is, eventually, you know, they reach the end of their shelf life with a given team. Not so much with the general managers. I mean, it has traditionally been a much more stable position. I think that the Montreal Canadiens are extremely happy with the work that Marc Bergevin has done. You know, that is a unique franchise in that, you know, your manager has to be someone that is fluent in French, can speak well in English, and has to, you know, ice a competitive team year in and year out. So I think that he's demonstrated enough that he has the managerial chops to work in that market, and he has all the other attributes that they like there. So the only thing that surprised me about this is that they announced it. I mean, how many times do you get a general manager's extension announced? Normally those things happen quietly. They tag an extra couple of years on it. It's just business that's being done, and it's not something that they necessarily publicize. So that was the only thing that caught me by surprise, the fact that they are making a point of going out and putting this into a public discussion. And I think that, you know, they wanted to show their faith in him, and I think that that's why they did it. But 6 years for a general manager, no, I don't think that's an unreasonable thing at all.
Yeah, there's no salary cap on them, so even if things go off the rails, and I don't think they will, I mean, you know, they're ranked number two in the Forbes thing, and ain't going to kill them. That's all that really matters. You know, he's done a terrific job. That is an incredibly difficult place to change things, so to speak. The only downside, if there is any, with him, when you have that good of a goaltender, I really don't know how I can judge a lot of things, because it covers up mistakes from the front office to the centerman who wins a Selke because of the goalie. That's the only thing. But boy, he has done. I mean, there was Subban there that they brought him along. They had the goalie. So I mean, I can see why they wanted to have this, like, the stability. It just shows the stability, and they're happy the way they're going, and everything's going well. So throw him the big check.
I know, Al, that Eric and I want to wish you and yours a very happy Thanksgiving tomorrow, but that does beg the most important question. Turkey or turducken?
Oh, no, it's turkey. I never liked that turducken thing. No. We just have the turkey, and it'll be bad because the way the Eagles are going here, everybody's ready to just give up on the holiday. It's been an ugly month in Philadelphia. One home win for the teams in the month. So it has really, really been ugly down here.
Well, a happy Thanksgiving, Al. We'll talk to you next week. Eric, we'll talk to you on Friday. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good one, guys.